Put your right hand in the box.
What's in the box?
Hey, stop. Put your hand in the box. I hold at your neck a gondra box.
Stop fear. Fear is the mind killer. And fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. I will face my fear. I will get it to pass over me and through me.
The Duke will die before these eyes, and he'll know that it is I, Man Vladimir Harkonnen, who encompasses his doom.
The Sleeper awakens.
Yummy, yummy, I've got Dune in my tummy, and it feels like reading books.
All right.
Now I'm in the mood. Hello, I am your God Emperor Henry Zebrowski, and here is my human wife, Holden McNeely.
I oblige you, sir, and I come with my milk, and I will feed baby, but I will feed dad as well.
Do you think that maybe your love will allow me to feel what it is to dance in a field, to be with my sweet, sweet sea etch again?
Maybe.
Okay.
We'll see about it.
Welcome to episode deux. That's the French. Welcome to the episode deux of Dunecast. We're going to be going a little bit more into the plot of Dune 1, but I tell you, this next little section, this quarter that we're going through, is a lot more philosophy than it is actual action.
To the point where I think, Henry, you are testing me right now. Because mm-hmm. I've been saying, what are we covering this episode? And he'll sort of start talking like he's
covering,
answering. But then he'll, yes, exactly. And then he'll twist it and turn. And then he just started quoting a passage from the book that I don't even think is in the section we are
covering. The Orange
covering.
Catholic Bible. I will always lay litany down upon you. It is what you like. It's important for you to know that a stone is weighty and the sand is heavy, but a fool's wrath is heavier than them both.
You're so excited that you remembered your quote.
I did.
I will say, I want to wait. We should probably recap what happened in the episode before we move forward.
Absolutely
nothing?
Not. Listen to that episode.
No, just to say, Paul and Jessica, his mother,
have been
cast out into the
thrown
desert.
Thrown out.
Their father has been murdered. He was supposed to take over Dune and
all
the
these sorts
industry.
Of shenanigans. But now we're in this section of the book where the bad guys are winning.
Baron Harkonnen. Yes, the
Harkonnen.
Harkonnen.
I actually remember this all the time. I have to constantly fix myself to say Harkonnen.
Oh, okay.
And not Harkonnen.
How do you get that from? What did you get that from? The Lynch
audiobooks.
Dune?
Oh, okay. You got to get it from the audiobooks. It's the only time I've ever heard any of these words said. And I think that's what's really important,
yes.
too. If you are reading along or you are delving into the world of Dune, the audiobooks are nice because you can really disappear into them and you can finally hear the pronunciations of half of the shit. And it's also fun to hear a weird old British man go, I don't understand. What is my terrible purpose? Like, I like him being Paul
and Jessica
at the same time. So now we know that the Jessica and Paul, they were supposed to have been murdered by the Harkonnen men, right?
Yes.
They were supposed to be taken. They specifically assigned a deaf soldier to tie up Jessica's because they've heard about this so-called powers, these witches' powers that the Bene Gesserit have. And that's what we'll talk about a little bit more in detail today.
Yes.
But what I love is the scene because the deaf one, right? Because the idea is they control people with the power of their voice, but it's a little bit more subtle than it's shown in the Dune films.
Yes. Also, I think it's very important to note that they say witch a lot and they throw around these terms,
it's
right?
It's a slur in Dune world.
But yeah, at the end of the day, it's the Bene Gesserit, which we're going to get into. And yes, they are technically like these witchy, witchy women, and they are fun and witchy.
Well, they're highly trained, but highly capable women.
It's like based in, it's when books, I really like this in Name of the Wind as well, to name drop another fantasy book I love.
Yeah.
But I love when they base the quote unquote magic in some kind of science. And in this case, the voice, the way they fight, it's all based in actually physical techniques. So there's no true magic involved. It's literally decades and decades and decades. I mean, hundreds of years of technique training.
Well, Dune
has allowed this for them.
Dune is the epitome of soft sci-fi, which is what that means, which is the idea that we are in a totally human future. There is no robots. There are some aliens that we'll meet eventually. But the goal here is that it is all about what is the peak of the potential of humanity. And that's kind of what the Bene Gesserit are supposed to be.
And that's why I wanted to go back. And did we talk about the Butlerian Jihad? Because I think if we're going to talk about the Bene Gesserit, we have to, in a way, talk about the Butlerian Jihad that sets all this up. Did we speak towards it much?
We a little. little bit, but to be honest, it's vague in the books. Unless you're reading the prequels,
right
now you just know for a fact that the Butlerian Jihad happened and that what it was humanity's escape from the League of Super Smart AIs that they had created.
Terminator happened.
The plot of Terminator happened on Earth.
On Earth.
On our time period.
The robots won. They took over for several years.
And then
the Butlerian Jihad
we
is
rose
the term
against
of humans coming back. And that explains why. And honestly, I feel like a dumb fuck asshole because I kind of learned this kind of in preparation for this episode this week. And I was like, oh, that really answers a lot of
questions. It does answer a lot of questions.
Four fucking 800-page books.
But you're supposed to read the books with this remaining a mystery because that's kind of what Frank Herbert said as he was writing these books. He liked dropping little seeds and bombs. Like, he just wrote the words Butlerian Jihad and then it kind of expects you to run with it.
Well, because what you do notice is, like, where are the robots? Why are there...
This is not robots. This is all titties, all dickies.
But you're doing sci-fi. You're like, oh, there must be androids. I mean, they're thousands of years in the future. They have all this high-tech stuff. And instead, we have Mentats. Mentats being humans that act essentially as living computers that have trained their brains, which, again, is a very fascinating thing.
We will get through... As we go through the plot points, we'll hit...
Yes.
We will hit all of it.
I just wanted to throw it out there, though, that technology has been fucking, at least like robotics, have been wiped out from this universe.
Yes, we said this last episode as well. But yeah, this is now where, that's why the Bene Gesserit have gotten the control that they have.
And the time between the Butlerian Jihad and sort of setting up for, you know, the new era, the Bene Gesserit got together and were like, Trixie, we're going to fucking puppeteer all this shit using our sort of witchy woman ways.
Yes, with the great scattering. We'll get there. Like, this is the problem, is that that's technically in the future. We will reveal all of these as we go. Because I've never read the prequels.
Ah.
Which is very difficult.
Yes.
Because there's a lot more story in the prequels.
But was not written by...
Me old son, Brian Herbert.
Yes, was written by the son.
No one has ever loved their father as much as Brian Herbert loves his father.
Yes.
I just can't imagine continuing my father's work, which is just smoking packs of Marlboro Lights and screaming at people at Publix.
Do you think they touched foreheads together to get the past, to get the memory?
They touch fucking tips. Touch each other's penises. So Jessica's writhing in these wraps, right? Which I do love because Jessica is also beautiful in their world. Like, they're very, very sexually enticed by Jessica. And so finally, this kind of series of shenanigans, Paul gets them all loose because Dr. Yui has set them up because he knew that he was going to be the traitor of all time and be known as the traitor of all time. But he loved the Atreides family and he did not want them to be wiped out. And he kind of conversely thought deep down in his brain that, oh, what I'll do is I will create this whole, like, revenge scenario.
He was trying to fix everything by...
And he did.
He did in a... Yeah, he did in a way. A man, of course, obviously...
But sideways. How it all goes? Because, again, there's just nothing more human than the world of Dune. So it never quite works out exactly how they want it to.
Something I appreciate about... And you're referring to the poison tooth in Leto, the lead suicide.
That's my favorite scene in the first half of the book.
It barely misses Harkonnen.
Because Harkonnen... Remember, what I love again about Baron Harkonnen, especially in this time period, this section of the book is Baron Harkonnen's section of the book. This is when he really is the most in charge and he's feeling himself. He's wriggling around. He plays. What I like is when they cuts back to like where he is now that they have taken over the Arrakeen Palace where Duke Leto used to live. And now that everything is fucking in tatters and destroyed, he's living in this grounded space guild freighter. Like they put this big spaceship on the ground and they put like rugs and pillows on top of everything, and they put it like it's very, very nice in there. And they said the one thing that they brought from Giedi Prime, the Harkonnen home planet, was one of those Pete Townsend artworks where it was just like it's just little boys like jumping and playing in a stream, and he just goes up and he's like, yes, another plan most excellently executed. Him just like rubbing the rumps of these like statue boys.
Yes, the art that you get it's the second you become a studio exec that you put in your living room.
He is a studio exec and he's loving it.
Also, okay, so Harkonnen, my big question was, and the reason why I brought up Mentats and stuff, is Baron Harkonnen, one of the things he does is he replaces Piter DeVries dies in the poison tube.
Well, unfortunately, one of my favorite characters, the Mentat assassin, Peter. Peter, he was, again, Brad Dourif, best character actor in the fucking world, and he just wanted to be in charge of Dune, or he thought he was going to be in charge of Dune. He's immediately got fucking gaped by Dr. Yui, Duke Leto, who finally, like, bites on the tooth, spits it out, and Harkonnen, with his sixth sense that can only come from a permanent villain, because he's this fucking very, very large man. On suspensor tracks, how does no one kill this man? He somehow had the reflexes to and like spin away from the gas.
I also told Henry that when I read Dude, the character of Harkonnen, I imagined Henry.
I get it
on
a lot.
Suspensors.
I get it a lot. I can't wait to not walk anymore.
With weird warts and stuff all over himself.
Yes. We will start a podcast network and it would rule the world.
We will show everyone the power. We will squeeze them for their podcast.
So at this point, Baron Harkonnen thinks everybody's fucking dead, right? Yeah. Because they chase them out into the desert. He's first told Paul and Jessica are definitely dead. And you're just like, excellent. And he just moves on with his day because, you know, he's a villain. So his job is he thinks like, oh, we've already done it. There's no way my elite group of essentially drug addicted soldiers could possibly be wrong, because what we find out is that the guy that loses the job by dying, also by Duke Leto, the head of the Harkonnen forces, gets immediately replaced by another dude who shows up, who happens to be addicted to this thing called Samuda, which is another one of those things I love when Frank Herbert drops in, which is these like weird Dune psych drugs, these like things that you do where it's like a combination of like, it's either a thing you eat or smoke, and then you listen to this type of music, and then the music puts you into a writhing foam, and then you have to take an antidote to pop out of
it. It's very cyberpunk before cyberpunk even.
But it's also just like, it's just got a lot to do with, because I don't know if Frank Herbert did a lot of drugs.
Yeah.
I don't know. I need to, when I go through, we're going to do an episode all about the bio of Frank Herbert, because I'd like to find out for certain.
And we'll look into it. But there was not, he doesn't have that rep like Philip K. Dick had.
No, he doesn't have the street cred of PKD. Frank Herbert was a man who did his homework. These first three books took 7 years to write. PKD said that he was writing books that he saw in memories of a present that hadn't happened yet.
The fact
he's
that
literally,
wrote,
PKD was insane.
The fact that it took that long to write it just is a clear indicator he wasn't a speed freak or a fucking cocaine hound.
I mean, he must have just pussy hound. Someone who was addicted to the spice down below.
I'm going to say there are very clear indications in the writings of the Dune series that he was indeed a pussy.
he liked the ladies. He liked a strong woman.
Jessica. I mean, you just talked about Jessica. One of the big things about the Bene Gesserit, to real quick, is just that they are like actually specifically very good at sex.
They're very good at sex because what they've learned early on is that the Bene Gesserit, they are both subtle and not subtle. They use sexuality to their way because what they understand is that men are incredibly weak, especially when it comes to their wieners. We allow a lot of decisions to flow through the urethra out of our penises and back in, and I don't know why.
Just that gravy, baby.
With the gravy rules everything, and they understand they have to get a hold of it. This comes from the Dune Companion. This is the Bene Gesserit, an ancient school of mental and physical training. The Bene Gesserit order was established primarily for the female students after the Butlerian Jihad, which is what you said, because the idea is to control all flows of information. They jumped right on it,
yes.
Essentially.
They saw an opening, and that's exactly what happened. The Butlerian Jihad happened, they saw their opening, and they were like, we're going to puppeteer the whole, over decades and generations, we're going to puppeteer this whole
We're going to take
situation.
All of this shit. They are keen powers of observation, which we'll see play out, because Paul gets this shit downloaded straight into the back of his brain. They also are body manipulators. They can do whatever they want in their own insides. They can control their organs. Like, this is an extreme example of what I'd say of like what they say about people that are yogis or very intense martial artists, where you can control your body temperature. You control like to the point where you could levitate.
One of the biggest early training techniques is just having someone sit there and only focus on moving just the tip of their pinky toe on one of their feet.
It's
and literally just
Kill
do
Bill
that for
style.
Hours and hours and hours.
Yes, and they do the hand exercises, which is what she brings up all the time, because the idea is to be able to control every single nerve of your body.
They're so good at hand manipulation. Yes. They will make you fucking I don't even want to talk about the Bene Gesserit massage technique.
But they also, what I like about them is that they, because they have different levels. levels, right? So the Bene Gesserit have people like what Jessica was, which is essentially a handmaiden to her reverend mother, which is she was just sort of like on her way up working for a boss, because the Bene Gesserit, the bosses are called reverend mothers. And they also have these positions within the imperial government where they do things like truth saying, which we'll find out now is that the Baron Harkonnen is very... he's very aware of the fact that what they're doing is both illegal and secret, but he is doing it in cahoots with the Emperor. The Emperor is there. The Emperor is guiding the hand of Baron Harkonnen, but at the same time, the Emperor can dump him at any time if he wants, because the Harkonnens have to pass the tests of their reverend mothers that are still within the Imperium, like Imperial control, because it all has to be legit for everybody to make the money that they're supposed to make at the end, even though it doesn't, you know, and then they're going to take it anyway. But they have to, in order to be a reverend mother, you have to do this thing where you have to go through what's called a spice agony, and successfully you transmute the water of life. And what that means is you're given this psychedelic poison that your body has to turn into not poison when you eat it. And the only way to make it to a higher level of being a reverend mother is that you basically have to make it through this ordeal to get through it.
And very important note, Jessica at this point in the story is not a reverend mother.
She is not. She's just a sexy, sexy concubine to a duke.
Also,
who's also just fucking one of the deadliest bitches to ever live.
Also, to be fair, they were cast out in the desert. And yes, Harkonnen should have done his due diligence and made sure they were dead. But the desert, insanely deadly. There are sandworms. Like, well, it's literally walking outside of Beetlejuice's house.
The Harkonnen purview.
The worms just immediately fucking come at you.
The Harkonnen's purview is that the Fremen are just a fucking bunch of scraggly whatever dudes.
Scrappy little nobodies.
Whatever. Just hanging out in the desert. And they should just be lucky that they are not consumed by worms, and he thinks that they all live in like these like primitive little huts, and that they're out there just fucking just living in fear of the worms and barely surviving. But what he doesn't understand is that the Fremen on Dune, they are the real controllers of the planet, and they actually are one of the most up to which the Bene Gesserit never thought that they'd have competition. They didn't know that the Fremen would actually be that competition.
To the point, well, and then, I mean,
because they release, right? So Jessica and Paul, they get away, right?
Yes.
They understand that they're in a lot of danger. They get scooped up. They get scooped up by an ornithopter, which these ornithopters are these fucking giant.
Please explain an ornithopter, because that was
they're
one
cool
of the first.
As hell.
That was one of the first things, like, okay, I guess it's an ornithopter. You know what I mean? Like, when you're
yes,
reading it as
course,
a non-sci-fi enthusiast.
It's a helicopter that looks like a bug. And I think that's cool as fuck. And it's got, like, wings that catches the... Because basically, Duncan Idaho slips down. He's just like, I'm coming after you. I'll see you in the future. And now, that's the first time that Paul understands that something might be a little bit different about him. Mm. Because he is...
Does he has a vision?
He's just... Not quite yet. He's found out that his father has died, and he doesn't know quite what to do about it. Like, he knows it immediately because there's a letter from Dr. Yui when they crash that has the Duke signet ring.
Oops, my B.
Oops, I did again.
I killed your Free
Britney.
Dad.
Free Britney. And Duncan Idaho comes down in an ornithopter, sees them. He's like, I'm going to come back. Paul realizes something's a little different because he's like, I recognize that was Duncan Idaho flying that ornithopter just by the weird little idiosyncrasies that I know about Duncan. He's like, I saw kind of the way, like all of these weird little traits that Duncan would do. I saw it in the way he was flying this copter, and I know that's not just my Bene Gesserit training, because Jessica has been giving him secret Bene Gesserit training on the side. And he was like, but that's not my training.
Bene Gesserit.
We should save that. That's our Weird Al, our hook. We're going to get this on TikTok.
I am working on a Dune parody song album.
This is
huge. If
you
want to get in on that. I can't believe I didn't tell you about this.
No, I'm here.
I've been writing an entire Dune parody.
I'm here. I'll do all the rap. You know how much I like desert rap. So they get scooped up by Duncan Idaho finally comes back and gets them. They go into the first sea etch that they ever saw. So the thing was that Duke Leto, when they were first all talking about this bullshit while he was still alive, he said he wanted to get in control of these, but they thought that these imperial, like, there are these stations out in the desert, and they were always thought for years that these things were inoperable. They were just kind of out in the desert, and they essentially, to the Harkonnens, he was like, ah, fuck it, we don't need anything to deal with these bullshit outposts, we don't need these. Duke Leto got really interested in them because he thought that they were filled with spice, the Imperials' hold on spice, and he wanted to get some for himself because he started to understand, oh, I have to be Trixie Trixies because everybody else is Trixie Trixies around me, but guess what? He got fucked.
He's not Trixie. He's too pure.
He's too good. He finally gets scooped by these Fremen, and they go into one of these Imperial holding areas. And it turns out the Fremen are a little bit more cunning than they ever thought. This is the first, like, sight into it. Because Paul, his brain realized, oh, fuck. Because for years, they were saying, they were talking about, how do we terraform Dune? That's, like, one of the big questions that comes out in the first chunk of the book. Because everyone's saying, like, there's no water here. And it's this massive fucking problem. But we've terraformed planets all over the universe. Why the fuck don't we just terraform Dune?
And I know the answer to this question, but we're not supposed to know the answer to this question.
Now we know the answer to the question, which is, for they kept saying that it was too expensive and no one wanted to do it. They thought it was this weird bribe thing going on with this. They thought that the Space Guild was doing...
It's because of the sandworm's relationship to spice generation,
we still don't know that part
yet.
Well,
that's what I was saying!
No, 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 but what we find out is that... It's not the Harkonnens and the Imperium that were bribing the Space Guild. It was the Fremen themselves saying that we don't want these weather satellites here because if we basically will cut a deal with the Space Guild on our own and just give them spice, because what they wouldn't discover if they put up these weather satellites is that the Fremen have a massive underground system that they have been living in since the dawn of fucking time on Arrakis.
Yes.
And they are highly organized, and they are already in the process of terraforming Dune.
And they have all the secrets when it comes, and probably one of my favorite things in the, especially the first book, is they have all the secrets when it comes to water conservation.
All of it.
And
they know everything about the they know every single thing about the planet. They've been working with Liet Kynes, this planetologist that was supposed to be a member of the Imperium. But Liet Kynes at this point has basically become a Fremen. He is a Fremen. He's married to a Fremen woman. He's a part of a Sietch. He is loyal to the Fremen, and what his overall arching goal would be to terraform Dune and make it so that we don't have to have anybody else on this fucking planet telling us what to do. But he's playing a long game, but it's not revealed until they showed up.
So the Fremen are us starting podcasts back in the...
Yeah, yes, but less physically able.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Mama. These guys are ripped fucking
These
shredded.
Guys are fucking...
Lean, though.
Killers.
Lean, though, because the way that they handle with water and everything, I mean, that's one of the fascinating things, right? Is, like, they're the still suits, the whole way that they can, like, turn dead carcasses.
They conserve
you. They can drain the water from them.
Well,
I mean,
if they,
literally,
that's a part of their thing. They believe that any expression that would involve water, like crying or is it like, it is sacred. Like they, because they've trained their bodies to not cry.
Yes.
So that if you really do feel pain, they'll be like, oh, see, he sheds his water for him.
Yes.
Which is this incredible touching moment of like, when you first know, when Stilgar first goes to meet with Duke Leto and they have that meeting, because Duke Leto's trying to woo them to work with the Fremen because he has an inkling, understanding like, I think these guys are fucking badasses and we need to work with them. And that the Stilgar looks at him and he's just like, I see that we will share water then. Our tribes will join. And then they sat and they stare at each other, and then he spits on the table and everyone's like, oh, and goes for their swords and shit. And then Duke Leto's like, hold, hold. That is a sign of honor. And then everyone's like,
yeah, they fucking pull out the blunts.
Well, fuck yeah, start sucking each other's dicks. They're like, a little bit more water's gonna get fucking shit.
This is gonna happen right now.
But now that, so Paul is with Liet Kynes, and they're kind of having negotiations. They're stuck underneath this ground. She finally sees, he's like, oh, fuck. They got tech. They got all the globe shit. They are working. There's labs here. There's a whole sophisticated thing, especially with the pack that he gets from Dr. Yui. He gets the thumper, which he had never seen before. It's like all of this shit. He gets a still tent. He gets the sand snorkel. He gets all of this bullshit. Don't you laugh. This is real tech. This is high tech Fremen tech.
The thumper is a pocket.
It's one of those remote controlled butt plugs.
Oh, okay.
It's for when you're a lawyer, but you're also kinky as hell and you need to just fucking kick up a Tuesday.
Frank.
Herbert is just a fucking big bearded, big titty boy just like me, just hungry for experience. So Leah Keynes and Paul are having like a standoff because they're sitting here and they're talking a little bit. Paul has now become a little bit more of an adult than he ever thought he ever would. So up until this point, Paul is not sure what the hell he is. He has a moment before they go into this meeting. It's the first example of what we call prescience, or his vision into the future.
And also the first sign that he's got like some Bennett kind of tendency.
And also he's a natural mentat. He's all of it. He has Bene Gesserit training. He's a Kwisatz Haderach. And also he could have definitely gone to mentat school. So he's got like a problem relating to people. Like, you're going to see immediately that Paul is actually very frightening, especially to his own mother, which is kind of like, oh, fuck you. You wanted this. You made him. And now you're afraid of the Kwisatz Haderach because she sees this view in his face because he seems to understand like, oh, shit's going to be different now. He can see in the past. He can see all realms of the future. He can see all realms of the present. The way he talks about it is like, he's like, the future is just now. Like, you're sitting with your mom. Everybody's dead. Everybody you know is fucking dead. You're sitting in a tent. Like, that is just like a big old, like, it's just a giant nipple with a sphincter on it, right? And you're inside of this tent, you're in the middle of a sandstorm, and then you turn to your mom, and you're like, I can see the fucking future. The future is like a flag. It's like, what do you call it? It's like a ribbon in the wind. Mm. And it's like, every statement changes the future. And it's like, why did you do this to me? What am I?
He's literally Matthew McConaughey in True Detective. He's like, time's a flat tire call.
He's right. Time's a fucking construct. That's another thing with PKD too. PKD also talked about the fact that time's not real, which I guess is what happens when you do a lot
so
of fucking
much cocaine. Just turns you into a fucking ambulance chasing lawyer.
But some of those guys are just interested in money. But so he has this kind of idea that there's something else going on. He's not quite sure what it is. Leah Keynes, to the Fremen, which you'll find out, he's become sort of their god leader too, because he was an off-worlder. But when he showed up and explained all of these things about the planet and what he learned, and then he fell in love with the Fremen culture so much, and he understood, honestly, he understood their superiority. Like, he understood that they are in very loyal tribe systems. They are unfallibly, they listen to their CH leader. They are incredibly forceful. They can kill a group of Sardaukar. They talk about how three of them can fight 100 Sardaukar, the most elite fighting force in the universe.
So genuine question, what keeps them and I know that obviously soon they're going to have some, maybe they might have like a leader or something that might push them to do this, but
I don't know
how come at this point they have not been just overthrown all the bullshit? Is it literally just because they don't have that one guiding force to lead them into that? Or is it just because they're just trying to kind of stay low and just build up their whole empire, a little mini empire?
I don't know. I think it's not clear. I think in my mind though, I think truly it's about, we're already dealing with our own shit, like fuck Harkonnens, we'll deal with it like when we want to, like we essentially can go kill them anytime we want. We are on a long game of terraforming Dune without any of these fuckers knowing, and they just don't know that we're living our whole lives. And he knows that as soon as we tell the Harkonnens, like as soon as we show up, and if you go for them and then you miss, and if you don't completely fucking kill them, the Imperium is going to show up with legions and legions of Sardaukar.
Yes.
And blow up your whole fucking lives.
Yeah, yeah.
And then
yeah.
Our Arrakis will become like, I believe what it's called, Secunda. I forget the planet that the Sardaukar come from, which is a prison planet.
Can we say one of the coolest things about the Fremen that like no longer happens now, but is like one of the things that we learn about what they used to be able to do?
What?
And I think this is another reason why they maybe haven't like arranged an attack yet.
What?
They used to be able to fucking ride the dope giant sandworms.
Oh, they don't just used to. They continue to.
Yeah.
They do. That's how they get around.
Okay. I thought it was, and re-catching up with the plot, I thought that it was something that didn't happen as much anymore.
No. You see. Oh, no, no. They
just have been keeping that kind of on the DL.
They don't want anybody to do with the worms.
Yeah.
Because what you'll find out is that the worms are their god. It's Shai Hulud. They worship and venerate the worms because the worms poop out spice. And because they poop out the spice, which makes them them,
makes
right?
Makes them feel nice. Poop out the spice.
It makes you feel nice. You get some. Get some.
And by nice, it makes me feel like, ah!
At first. But then you get addicted to it, and then you can't leave the planet, which is also what Paul realizes as they're sitting around. He's like, oh, there's no escape for us. We are now on Arrakis, because what happens is, as you get used to the constant permeation of spice just in the air, you get addicted to it, and you can't not have it. It kills you to not have it.
Yes.
Like, so it's a poison and a cure all at once, and it's like oil. It's that concept of, like, you're fucking addicted to it.
Yeah.
So he meets up with Liet Kynes. And Liet Kynes, what I was saying, he's kind of become this de facto god emperor, quote unquote, of his group of Fremen. They worship him. They you know, praise Liet. Liet becomes kind of short term for god, not unlike Shai-Hulud, which is their real god of their, like, cosmological religion. But he's kind of their focal point. And then you have Paul shows up, and they have this tete-a-tete. And essentially Paul says, like, you know I'm Neo, right? Like, your people think I'm Neo. And Liet, in his own way, the first, like, he doesn't want any god competition, because he's like, oh, we can't. You're literally a child. I am a man of the desert. Your child telling me that you're Neo. I don't care, because I'm the god here. So they have this attempt. But finally, like, Liet's just like, there's something about this Keed. There's something about him. He sees him. He's like, okay, let's bond together. Let's join our tribes to figure out. All of a sudden, Harkonnen show up. They follow Duncan Idaho. We see, which is now, it's a scene now that I have to know, because this is for all of y'all. We see Duncan Idaho get murdered by Sardaukar that are obviously in Harkonnen outfits, right? Like, he's killing a bunch of people. But there's this flash when we see Duncan Idaho die in the hallway, trying desperately to save Paul. Paul looks back, the sphincter closes, and then they leave to go out into the desert. They jump in an ornithopter that's left by Liet Kynes, and he's like, you're going to do this thing that we know as Fremen we can do, but no one else knows that we can do. You're going to take that ornithopter, you're going to jump into a sandstorm, the sandstorm that they've been told again and again and again, destroy everything it touches and kills, can strip the fucking skin from a person. He's like, you're going to jump into this thing and you're going to go and you're going to ride the top of the sandstorm. And then I'm going to tell dudes on the other side, they're going to find you, because we know where the sandstorm's going. Meanwhile, like, Paul's like, what? Because he's like, that's a lot of shit that you know that I had no fucking clue that you knew how to do. Because he's still constantly learning, like, oh, these motherfuckers are for real. Yeah. Like, they got a lot of shit going on. And so they leave. But the scene of Duncan Idaho dying is going to leave reverberations throughout the rest of the series.
My God.
Because this is, it's weird, because it's in Dune 1. I don't know if he meant it, because in Dune 1, it's kind of like, that cool guy's dead.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Oh, that cool warrior dude's kind of dead. But then it turns out, like, oh, this is like the most important part of all of the books.
Weirdly enough, yes.
Because Paul sees him. And then what you and I hold to know about the books is that that's going to be, that last look is like a thing that is shared forever. Like, Paul does this thing when they're in the desert where, like, Duncan Hyde is like, do you want my shield, young lord? And he's just like, I tell you what, Paul, your right arm is shield enough for me. And it's like this weird trust he gave Duncan Idaho, which is like, okay, but then it's very important.
And now you're asking, well, how? Why is this the most important character? He dies right here, and I also...
Yeah, like page 300.
You also know that book 4, I mean, these are thousands of years in the future. How could that possibly be? You will find out these things.
Also, just remember, every single time you think you're about to say goodbye to a character in Dune, and you miss that character, just know it's coming back in a way that you might be like, why'd you do this? Why is this coming back? Why is this guy coming back?
Yes.
And it's like, they keep coming back. So don't worry about it. Anybody you like, they show back up at some point, except for Liet Kynes. Liet Kynes is just dropped off in the middle of the desert.
I, like, forgot about Liet Kynes.
There's a spoiler, by the way, because he's a big... He's a big character.
Yeah, in that first book, in that part.
But. He is very big, because he teaches them all the vague small things they even know about the desert. That's kind of what he served to do. It's like the last version of, like, things used to be normal on this planet. Things used to have an order.
Yeah.
Liet Kynes was their little god. Harkonnens were, you know, they were there for 85 years. Just, you know, doing their little horrible thing on this planet, working their people, working the people of Arrakis. Because there are people that are on Arrakis that are city bound, right? That are just humans that live there, that are from other parts of the Imperium. They're all probably mixed with some Fremen, but mostly the Fremen are both a myth and a fear and all of the shit. They just live out in the desert. They don't want to have anything to do with the water fat people of the cities.
Yes, and that's why you have to look at Paul as this distillation of every single strong element in this universe, or at least this civilization, because he's got the Bene Gesserit.
He's got Bene Gesserit training.
He's got the Fremen knowledge now.
Soon. Especially when he fully becomes Fremen.
We'll at least say he's now in the pocket to learn all the shit from the Fremen. He's got all of this just bureaucratic knowledge of the all the different
strategic. He's learned how to be a propaganda artist. He's learned how to be a political maneuver. Is that the term? Is that a term?
Sure.
He's just a fucking. He is all of these things. He's Karl Rove. If Karl Rove with Timothy Chalamet, and then if also he could do karate, which yes. Timothy Chalamet can't do.
He's got Ralph Macchio. Meets Timothy Shyamalan
meets Martin Luther King meets Neo. So it's all of these things at once. But we don't really know quite yet the full extent of what's going to happen with Paul, because the one thing we'll learn about the Kwisatz Haderach is that every fucking person, every one of these fucking people think that they're the ones that have control over the Kwisatz Haderach. That they's some kind of fucking puppet. The Bene Gesserit think they got him under control. The fucking Fremen think that they'll get him under control, but they don't understand that he's the fucking spark that's going to set this whole fucking planet on fire.
I want to throw out, though, the reason why the Bene Gesserit, okay, because I've been biting my tongue about Missionaria Protectiva, because you already kind of mentioned the religion of the Fremen. I do want to sort of instill this maybe concept at this point, unless it's too early. But I also want to say that the reason why the Bene Gesserit, who, as we already said, are so brilliant, are these puppeteers of the universe at this point, have been working so hard to create this chosen one and then use this chosen one for all
for
their
own power.
But the reason why you're thinking like, well, then why is it throwing them off so hard? Well, the reason for that is because it just jumped the gun a bit. They did not expect Jessica to have this man. They thought there was going to be a whole nother generation before
the
chosen one was going to happen.
That's their reasoning. Okay. But my view
is that you create the monster and then like it'll never be under your control.
You think you want this thing.
Yeah.
You think you want this powerful tool, because what they don't understand is that they're closer to the Harkonnens than they think they are. Because number one, one thing that's revealed, this is a spoiler, as he's sitting in his prescient fucking sway, he realizes not only I could see all these paths, so I can actually see who your father is, mom, because the Bene Gesserit, they also keep everything secret about where they come from and the DNA lines that they're trying to contribute, because they want you to, number one, be able to fuck whether or not that guy turned out to be your brother. Like because they might want that. They're building up certain qualities in people. What you find out is that Jessica is a child directly of Vladimir Harkonnen.
Bum, bum, bum.
And so she carries his genes. And you find out, like, they didn't even... They talked about the Kwisatz Haderach, and they floated all this shit, but they wanted them to combine Harkonnen and Atreides
would create the Kwisatz Haderach, but they thought Jessica was not going to have a boy.
Well, they thought it was just for political gain. They thought it was for political gain. We're going to bring these two upstart shitty houses that are fighting all the time. We're going to bring them together. Then we're going to marry that... to whatever, because they're praying that the emperor would have a son. Like, that's the big thing, is that the emperor has not had a son. All we know is, like, now when you read the books, you see these words, like, at the beginning of each chapter that come from Princess Irulan, who is the emperor's daughter, but he has no sons. There is no heir. So this idea of, like, it's basically, they had to create all of this shit. It's a long game, but they were completely fucking wrong.
Yes.
But now Paul, who's his whole life, has been trained. Because remember, in the first book, it's just supposed to be Atreides versus Harkonnen. They're the bad guys, right? So his whole life, he's been trained to hate Harkonnens. But it turns out, he is one. So now he has to, like, figure it. He has to roll this around in his head. Cut to Harkonnen. Harkonnen is, I'm so filled. And he tries to explain to everybody, because he's like, we must go. He calls in his best boy, Beast Raban.
Right.
Beast Raban is described as ugly of face and of body, almost fat enough for suspensors, because Harkonnen, he doesn't be like, he will earn his suspensors one day. You can tell by his girth. He's so excited for what, because imagine that, being able to give your son, like, his first suspenders.
I like that one part where he orders a pizza and then just drains an entire slice of grease into a cup, drinks the cup, and throws the pizza away.
Pizza's for losers.
Patrick, only the grease.
The essence. The pure essence. The Italian.
Do not
essence.
Waste the grease or you will be sent to death.
You want to face the mighty wrath of beautiful.
He believed in not wasting any grease. And that was always very similar to the Freeman, but it was more disgusting.
So now that they have been blown up a second time, Paul and Jessica, the guy comes to Baron Arconi and says, like, "Nah, listen, boss. This time we definitely got him. There ain't no way that anybody's going to make it through one of them sandstorms, boss." And he's just like, "Yes, well, show me the bodies." Which, again, remember, no body, no crime. All of you out there, if you're going to commit murder, get rid of the body.
You referenced the Taylor Swift song off of Evermore.
I did?
Yes.
It's called No Body, No Crime?
Yes.
Is this one of her Bon Iver, like, everybody's
Haim
crying
is
bullshit?
Haim is featured on it.
Corey Haim? He's dead. Are they named after Corey Haim?
They just took a bunch of different clips from the various TV shows he was on, and that's how they got him on the song.
I can say, I don't think I've ever heard a note of Haim. I don't know because
you
I'm too
heard
busy
it at a Starbucks.
I'm
you
too
heard
busy
it,
with Dune.
You heard it at unbeknownst to yourself at a Old Navy or whatever it is.
Is it the one that goes like, "You want it?
You got it. Yeah, you want it.
Baby, you got it." It's Dune. Is that it? Yes. I just put Dune in all songs.
The part where they said it's Dune.
Yes.
absolutely.
So he calls his Beast Raban in. Beast Raban is a fucking motherfucker.
I hate this guy. I don't want to hear about this
fucking
guy.
Fucking love this guy. Love this guy. Because it's him and his younger brother, Fade Rautha, right? Those are the two Harkonnen, like,
yes.
heirs. So the ones that are going to be taking over the whole fucking shebang. And he decides, because he needs money. Because one thing that they found out, because Thufir Hawat, who we'll get to next, Thufir Hawat, he kind of estimated, and we'll find out it's true, is that whatever it was that it took Baron Harkonnen to bring this massive fleet of soldiers. Because the thing that what it took is, like, the entire Atreides force was on Arrakis. And they got blown up. The Atreides force, they've been fucking kicking ass across the universe for fucking decades. They decided to, the Harkonnens pulled out all the stops. They spent what he said, he estimated it would take 60 years of spice output to match what they spent on the invasion. Because also, the tricksy thing that Duke Leto did is that he destroyed all the private stores of spice on Geaty Prime in this big suicide attack. That basically, it left, like, the Harkonnens are kind of fucked right now because they spent all of their money on this shit. So the Beast Raban, who's a fucking rapist and a murderer and, like, one of the worst motherfuckers on the face of the planet, he's like, "You're now in charge of Dune. Your job is to get me fucking income. And what's going to require for you to do is squeeze. I need you to squeeze." Which I actually understand. Because it's me screaming at, like, my accountant.
Right.
About taxes.
Yes. About how illegal squeeze. Your tax situation is. We shouldn't say these things
squeeze.
To a microphone.
I'm legal. I'm paid up.
He's above board.
And so now, so what they have in their hands is Thufir Hawat, who is the head Mantad assassin for the Atreides. This guy's a fucking real deal. But we got to discover, because you remember in the first episode, they floated this idea where they tried to make everyone suspicious of Jessica, that Jessica was going to be the traitor. Because they always said the whole thing is that it would be no one anybody would suspect, and the very nature of the traitor would destroy the heart of the Atreides family. So Thufir Hawat, using this information and his Mentat abilities, said, "It's Jessica." So they have a big confrontation at one point when everything is still, before everything blows up. So now he still thinks it's Jessica, but now he is in the Harkonnen's hands. He's going to be in the Harkonnen's hands quickly, because first you see Thufir Hawat hanging out with these Fremen. They help him get out. And you see one of the coolest fucking scenes in this book, which is him watching from a cave hole the Fremen fucking destroy an entire fleet of Sautekar in a suicide run. They basically steal, like, they steal a fucking Ornithopter quick from these, like, a bunch of Sautekar to kill everybody.
Did you say the Sautekar, they are the Emperor's special soldiers?
Yes.
They're the Emperor's new groove.
Yeah, the Emperor's new groove. They've been stuck in, but they're wearing Harkonnen outfits, so people think that they're Harkonnens because that's a part of the whole cover-up, right?
Okay.
And so they go in, they blow up this whole space school thing. It's fucking wild. Thufir sees shit happening, and he's just like, "This is the most amazing. I've never seen such daring. I have never seen such taught men, all so loyal, ready to fight."
What an underwhelming reaction.
Oh, well, this is just simply, I like this.
I'm glad they could do this.
Because he was hoping, in the end, I want to join up with the Fremen. Yeah. He had known from the very beginning, oh, the Fremen, we think they might be pretty intense. And then when they did that, he's just like, oh, yeah. But then he immediately gets caught by the Harkonnens. But this is the thing. So Harkonnens got this mentat.
Yes.
And the Harkon mentality, which is
they
the truth.
They replaced Piter with this mentat.
With this mentat. And Harkonnen gets really pissed in this scene. Because the guy goes and he's just like, I see that you actually murdered your mentat. Because he thought he would be like saying something cool to Baron Harkonnen. But he gets pissed. He's like, I never waste a weapon without extensively thinking about it. He really does view people around him as tools and weapons. And so he really wasn't done with Petter yet. When Petter was murdered, he was pissed because he needed his Mentat assassin. Now he's got a new Mentat assassin, Thufir Hawat. But the thing is with these guys is that Mentats, they don't necessarily have house loyalty. They can learn it, and you can earn a Mentat's loyalty up to a point.
But at the end of the day, they're as robotic as a human could possibly be in the sense of, like, they don't have big emotional connections.
They're not supposed to, because if they have these emotional connections, they can't do the far view, sightings of all of the computations that they need to do.
So also, too, on top of that, Thufir believes that Jessica is the one that shat the whole bed here. So therefore, that answers my question I posed at the beginning, which is why did Harkonnen replace Howard, who was coming from the Atreides house, why did he employ him? Is because he actually perceived him as being both in his pocket and at the same time not emotionally connected in any way to any of this.
But also what he does to Thufir Hawat before anybody knows or before Thufir knows.
Yeah, that part where he tickles his knees. And I was like, ew, why are you doing this?
That's inappropriate.
Dude, this is creepier than what I do with my boys.
Yes. Let me see your reflexes. I kicks. I hit him with a little mallet. And his foot kicks. This is the best game I've ever seen.
That scene made me want to throw the book in a fireplace.
It's like 20 pages on fucking knee reflexes. But he decides to put secret poison in Thufir Howard's food. Mm. And then puts the antidote for the poison in other parts of his food. So what Thufir Howard doesn't know is that he's about to be completely chained up to the Harkonnens. And he will try to fight, but now he's just like, he's fixing him. Plans within plans. But that's it's hard because you can't get a Mentat's loyalty. You have to fucking work it out. Like, you have to use their information against them. Because he's hoping, because he kind of openly says that the Tlaylaxu are supposed to send him a new evil Mentat. Because the problem with evil Mentats are needed for evil people, because normal Mentats...
Twisted Mentats.
You have to be able to... Like, a Mentat's supposed to be able to use all computations to kind of come up with the best decisions possible for anybody in any scenario, right? Like, and it's supposed to be logical, and it's supposed to be cost-effective, and it's supposed to be, like, strategic, each one. But an evil Mentat will tell you how to do all that, but... evil.
An evil accountant.
It's like one of those guys who used to work for the mob. But yeah. Fucking, where is this guy?
It's like, I got a guy for you to do your taxes. This guy doesn't give a fuck.
I need that guy. Where is he?
Gives no shits about legalities.
Because I also put it, this also comes from a Dune companion. Let's see if they also can explain a Mentat even better. A Mentat is a human trained to possess computer-like logic and computational ability. A Mentat's abilities are heightened through the use of Sappho juice, which is, if you see in the David Lynch movies, it's the same thing where their lips are all purple.
Yes.
But I don't know the difference between Sappho juice and spice, but I know they get spice eventually. It's different. So many juices in there.
It's funny. The physical difference is behind blue eyes when it comes to the spice. You have blue eyeballs.
But you got pink lip.
When you got the pink lip, that means you that Tlela.
You just that Tlelaxu dip. Because yes, man, the Tlelaxu, I can't wait till we get to book 3 to talk about the Tlelaxu.
Yeah, I was about to say, don't even worry about...
Book 2 and 3.
I said that word, and then I said that word, but just don't even worry
about
it.
Book 2 and 3. I love the Tlaylaxu. We're going to get into the face dancers. We're going to get into the idea of these gigantic... It's an entire planet of just biotubes making human creatures.
Yeah.
I fucking love that shit.
It's very interesting stuff.
But so, Thufir Hawat has been captured by the Harkonnens. Paul and Jessica are in the middle of this fucking storm. And she is really, really... scared of Paul at this point. Paul's getting kind of unhinged. And what Paul lets loose a little bit is when he went into his meeting with Liet Keynes, and he kind of drops, he's like being real adult in that meeting where he says like a button, like threatens this dude. This guy could fucking cut his face off, right? He's like really intense. And he's still like, and now I'm seeing him as Timothée Chalamet Ding Dong. So it's like Timothée Chalamet Ding Dong goes into the office of a warrior king. And he's just like, I'm the Duke now. And you will see, I will wield my power most effectively. And you have to be like, I guess I take this guy super seriously or whatever, because he's fucking 95 pounds, but everybody's bowing to him. But he apparently had been operating that whole time under the guise of second sight. I don't want to talk about the prescience until we get into book two.
Yeah.
Because book two is a little bit...
Or even until he goes through the test.
The spice agony.
Well, spoiler alert, by the way, not only... He might also become...
I don't know what he's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen at the end of this book.
He just ended up... both Jessica, who's not a river mother yet, and Paul, who also might want to go through this process, just ended up in a situation where they're fucking nuts deep in spice.
And they just have to... because he blames it on that. He's saying... He starts to understand, like, oh, my powers are starting to kick in because I'm soaked with the spice just from eating it in the spice coffee. Because they eat it in their food. They eat it in their drink. It's literally
what happened to LA when weed got legal.
It's just I am weed right now. Like, I have to have it to smile.
Possible item I could put in my body now can be infused with weed if I'd like it to be.
Do you need weed tampons? Yes. They are there. Do you need weed shoes? You can get them. They're all hemp shoes.
They got rollies too, even. They got the light up ones.
Hemp was fucking shut down by the fucking cotton industry, dude. Because you don't fucking get a hemp with multiple use. You can eat the seeds, dude. You can make bread from it and rope.
This is actually a Freeman talking about water to a bored, very bored Atreides.
But what he understands, Paul, because of his second sight, he made all of the decisions he made. He was seeing it from the present into the future and was aping a future version of himself. So he said he was walking in steps, and then when they got into the ornithopter, he stepped into a blank point of his prescience, and so he didn't know whether or not this shit was going to work out at all. But you start to see, oh, this second sight that everyone's going to say later on, he's so blessed to know the future, that he knows how to move to make everything safe, and he knows what to do in order to get the best outcomes for everybody. But it's also a thing you're chained to.
Yeah, it's a curse, and it's also a gigantic responsibility, because now I think one of the biggest overall concepts of this book is everybody knows what's best for the universe.
Everybody knows. Everybody,
the
Bene Gesserit,
the Emperor,
the
Harkonnen,
everybody knows.
And so this is the story of like maybe one person who actually might know and can actually
do something about it.
Control it. And
yeah, maybe it'll change everything. Or maybe we're not
supposed to know and supposed to have this kind of control, because at the end of the day, it might create a weird utopia dystopia.
Or a 4,000 year reign of a emperor worm
god.
But
yeah.
You know, that's all. Again, we're skipping ahead. So much.
I haven't heard that one yet. I see a worm with like a tiny mustache.
It's so hard to get it to stick to this fucking worm. That's why in my mind, every time he has one of these prescient like outbreaks, I see him like seeing into book five, a scene from book three,
terrifying.
A scene from before book one.
At this point, we should say, like, because we're making it sound like,
and then he sees us doing this podcast.
Right.
He sees us doing it.
We're making it sound like he doesn't have the control.
No, he has no control
later. Like, he's very, it's very unwieldy.
Oh no, it zips in and out. He's a child. It's the first time it's happening to him. And the spices are waking it into him.
Yes,
it's starting to understand. Oh fuck, like, I'm a superhero.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to be one. I didn't want this shit. You guys made me this, but now I guess I'm in charge.
It's Peter Parker, yeah.
And so he's in this ornithopter. He's driving around. He is crazed. And, you know, his mommy is like super like, you're not being a baby right now. And they fucking go through all of the, get through the vortex, and they manage to land and find themselves out in the middle of the desert. So they have survived. But despite what everybody said that was going to happen, they made their way through the storm. They're now landed. And they have all of this gear, right? They have all of this desert gear. And they didn't know how to use it. But somehow he can access his memories and say, like, I know what this thing is. I know what a thumper does. What we'll do with the thumper is it's this mechanism that you stick into the stand and it goes boom, 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 boom. And it tracks a worm to it. And then you can go the opposite way. And then you have to walk. He also remembers from his memory, you have to walk in the desert, not like a man would. Like you can't make a distinction, like, which I also is like, it's one of those ecological like winks where the whole point is that the way to survive in the desert is that you're supposed to be of the desert. And I think it's very important to remember, because I think it's also, there's like a magical thought in there too, where there's something about how if you want shit to line up in your life, a good way to do it is to slide into an environment where you are now working in concurrence with the environment instead of against it. Where he knows the only way for me to not attract a worm is I have to move like an animal would that wouldn't be a human. So you have to go step, stop, slide, step, step, slide, pause, step. When you're in the desert, it's a long time. So yada, yada, yada. They arrive at the CH. That's where we're going to come up. We're going to start next episode and talk about my favorite scene in Dune 1, which is them all meeting up for the first time.
Great.
Because what I love about this is that, because again, we've only heard tell of the powers of the Bene Gesserit and the powers of the Fremen, and watch them like butt France is fucking sweet.
I mentioned a phrase, and we can hold off until next week if you want, but I did mention a phrase that was in our notes for this week, Missionaria Protectiva.
The Missionaria Protectiva is...
You know, we mentioned how Bene and the Gesserit were essentially trying to be puppeteers of the universe after the robots were defeated in the giant robot war that never really gets talked about that much.
They filled a gape that was there. And they understood, I think in a way, that like on Earth, I think women... I'm maybe going on here in a little fucking long.
Check yourself before you fucking wreck
Here's
yourself.
The thing about women is that they were abused a lot on the planet Earth. They actually were in a secondary position. Once we got rid of all of the moon religions and we became mostly a solar religion based, and Christianity.
Orange Catholic Bible, we'll talk about it some other time.
All this kind of bullshit, how we became essentially a patriarchy by subjugating the creative power of women. And we did that. We controlled them because we were afraid of them. The Bene Gesserit decided, what if there was a future where women were totally in charge? And women were the puppeteers of the universe.
Yes.
And I think they did it. They tried it. And this is the Missionary Protectiva definition from the Dune Companion. A propaganda arm of the Bene Gesserit. I find it interesting that this person calls it propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
The Missionary Protectiva was a cadre of missionary-like sisters of the order who seeded the known universe with prophecy patterns for the protection of other Bene Gesserit personnel who might venture to backwater worlds, quote-unquote, backwater worlds. So what they have is they decided to act just like colonizers.
They decided to create religion in different spaces, create legends and myths to create
hook points,
yes,
for the Bene Gesserit to show up and be in a place so when we show up, okay, if we show up on a planet that we're not maybe ready for, well, at least there'll be precedent for we are in control and that we are a safe group here. And what they didn't know is that this Missionary Protectiva person went a long time ago, arrived in Arrakis, and gave them the concept of Modib, the desert mouse.
Yes.
The one that shortens the path, I believe is the term that they use.
Yes.
This guy, the Lisan Al Ghieb.
Yes.
Because while they have the Kwisatz Haderach, I don't know why they didn't think, oh, we're like creating parallel things here.
Yes,
hopefully they don't fucking show up together at the same time.
What is so great about what we're saying right now is the Bene Gesserit completely fucked themselves in the ass by creating this myth of a chosen one in the Fremen tribe.
That they thought was going to help them.
And then they literally just through this series of unfortunate events have delivered this concept human to the Fremen in this moment.
They just gave it to him, because that's the thing is that now, because the Bene Gesserit are... Now it's all, everything's in control, because the Bene Gesserit, to be fair, did not know that this fix was going down on Dune.
No.
They did not know. They were not put into the plans. They did not know that there was this going to be this war, there's going to be a fake Harkonnen sponsored by the Imperium, they didn't know all of this shit was going to happen. So they didn't know that they were going to immediately lose control of the Kwisatz Haderach.
Yes.
Because it went straight to the Fremen.
Yes.
Which is this group of ragtag fucking people that
scrappy
no one,
little nobodies.
Nobody had any money on these guys. No one thought these were going to be guys that were going to lead the galactic jihad, and that word is important.
Yes.
That word is important in these dunes. They were going to lead the jihad against the entire universe.
Yes.
And we're just seeing the little spokes of this wheel.
That is where we're at the end of this episode. At the beginning of the next part, this union will form. And I think that is some fascinating Herbert at work, like bringing it all together, having it all connect in this crazy way.
Frank Herbert would go on to say, and we'll cover this a lot later on, but Frank Herbert will go on to say he thought in his mind he was writing the book. So, I mean, he's insane, but I like that about him, where he was like, Dune will explain everything. And that's just like, all right, well,
okay.
We'll fucking see, bro.
We'll see what happens. We'll see if it explains.
See how fucking does it explain all everything right, for
Clarissa,
you?
Clarissa, fucking lay it down then.
All right, why don't we call her and see what Clarissa has to say about all this?
All right.
Honestly, I could use some help. I wish that Clarissa was a resource.
Was a co-host of a podcast. We could bring her in.
An executive producer, like somebody come in here just helped it. Just create more of an explanation. It's right outlines.
It's just two Fremenish men coming into a room once a week and just trying to hammer it all out.
Just screaming at each other, and we don't know anything. We don't know how to pleasure our wives. We don't know how to fucking make a career better.
We literally grapple for 30 minutes before we, and then immediately we start recording.
We scream and scream and scream, and then we have a hot dog eating competition just to see if one of us will throw up before the show, and then we begin.
And then we start.
Hey, and now thank you guys so much for joining us this week for Dunecast. We'll be back next week. Listen to all the other incredible shows on LPN. Last Podcast on the Left, Wizard and the Bruiser, Page 7, Pop History, Abe Lincoln's Top Hat. It's all out there. But now, another selection from Dune Theater.
We now join the Baron Harkonnen as he is fit for new suspensors. My dear Baron, please get off the ceiling. I may be your tailor, but I'm very busy this day.
But what if I like it here on the ceiling?
You've got to stop spinning,
I'm
please.
I'm spinning on the ceiling. Spinning, spinning. I make myself sick. Oh. Then I throw it up.
I know what
now
you do.
Now I drink to throw up. It's delicious. I'm evil. Now I take my penis out.
Yes, we all know with the boy.
And did somebody say a little boy? I'll come down for little boys.
Please come down.
You know, I tell you what, Taylor, it's sometimes lonely at the top.
Yes, everyone loves it when a man talks about how difficult it is to be rich and powerful.
No one wants to get to know the real me.
Because maybe the real you is shitty?
Yeah. But that also gives me my bad boy attitude, my reputation, Joan Jett.
Please, you know I have to outfit Fade Ralpha with a new leather penis hammock this day.
Are you yelling at me? Are you telling your Baron what to do?
No, I mean maybe. I mean, I don't know.
I'll take your heart plug out, and I'll watch you die. And then I'll laugh about it, and then I will fly around the ceiling again.
I know that's what you'll do. You've done that to countless tailors before me. Please just come down.
How about you come up here?
You know I can't.
Spinning.
Just quit being a villain for 1 second so I can fit you with these new suspensors. I know they're about to give out.
Foolish tailor. I will never.
I did fall.
Told you so.
Never tell anyone I fell.
You know I won't. Tell anyone?
It's too risky.
Ugh. I'm gonna have to pull your heart plug. Pull!
Fuck. I should have picked a different line of work!
Yep, you should have been an accountant. Though I did kill all the accountants this morning. Well, I guess I'm just gonna lie here. Without my suspensors, it's very difficult for me to move with my current weight. I don't mind it.
And this has been another edition of Dune Theater.
And thank you for listening to Deep Dives Dune here on LPN. Make sure to listen to all of the other wonderful shows we have on the LPN network. It's a lot. There's many of them. Last Podcast on the Left, Page 7, Wizard and the Bruiser, Abe Lincoln's Top Hat. You should go find them. You should go find them. Because they are very good. You will like them. Bye, Big Dooney. Bye-bye.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.